the intentions that the United States had were not democratic intentions of what they had.
The Ford Act, also known as the Organic Act, was enacted on April 12, 1900. It forced citizenship on the people of Puerto Rico. Whether you wanted to be a citizen of the United States or not, did not matter, as this was the law of the land. Now imagine, one day waking up and being told, you aren't American anymore, and that if you try to be American, we will put you in jail for an indeterminate amount of time. That was the Ford Era.
Before the United States invades Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico enjoyed the experience of a crop, a mixed crop economy, meaning the economy of Puerto Rico was in good shape. We grew every consumable item that we needed in the island. There was a relationship between what we needed to consume and what was being produced in the island. So we consume what we produce what we consume. And it's that balance that sort of creates a good economy for Puerto Rico. And it was a mixed crop economy. When the United States takes over and devalues the Puerto Rican peso, and the Puerto Rican peso was equal to the US dollar, it devalues it by making it 40 cents less, meaning from it being 100 pennies. Every Puerto Rican peso then was worth only 60 pence. So by devaluing the Puerto Rican peso, they forcing the Puerto Rican to use the US dollar. And what it did was it transformed the mixed crop economy to a monoculture economy, meaning they took the island of Puerto Rico, divided it into four parts, and it was sugar corporations that basically ruled the island. So whether it was vast farming of, let's say, coffee and rice and pineapple, they took all those lands and made it into just sugar cane production. By transforming Puerto Rico to a monoculture economy, it destroyed the Puerto Rican economy because you can't live on sugar alone, you need other products. But the second part of that process was to force the Puerto Rican people to become so totally dependent on the United States that every other crop then has to be bought from the United States. So the crops are coming from the United States and other areas. Right now, in the present state of affairs in Puerto Rico, that's a really big problem for the people. 85% of the food in Puerto Rico comes from the outside. It's not being produced by the island. So those are the consequences of the change in economy in Puerto Rico, and which is it's reached its level of today with the economic crisis for Puerto Rico. But as you can see, what the United States installed in Puerto Rico is a forced assimilation process. It's forcing the Puerto Rican to forget that they're Puerto Rican and assume that they were North American in every aspect of life. And that was a real impressive state of affairs in Puerto Rico.
When you say defend themselves, what do you feel like you need to defend yourself against?
Colonialism. Colonialism is the violent, inhumane system that prevents people against each other. Does not allow the country to develop fully. And it's a team based on continuous repression, physical repression, cultural repression, ideological repression, in every form. And so, when we see each other as being organized and defending the cause, and show that their culture, their spirit is destroyed.
So the Commonwealth says this is where it has brought us to where we are today. $73 billion in debt, 16% unemployment rising, 42% living below the poverty line and rising, 100 schools are closed, teachers are unemployed, children have nowhere to go. And this is maintaining the current status.
Everything going in and out of Puerto Rico has to be shipped in U.S. cargo ships. So in the world market, Panama has one of the cheapest shipping companies, right, in terms of the cost. So if Puerto Rico needs to import something from, let's say, Argentina or Brazil, it can't hire a Panamanian ship to go to Brazil, pick up the goods, and bring it straight to Puerto Rico. It would have to first go to the mainland of the United States, transfer to a U.S. flagship, and then go to Puerto Rico, which increases the cost of living in Puerto Rico.
Well, government has become the biggest game in town in Puerto Rico, but there's a reason for that, and that's because the public sector has completely dominated the economy. There is no private economy. There is no industry. The United States has specifically prohibited Puerto Rico from developing its own shipping industry because the Jones Act enables all foreign registry vessels have to have severely, steeply graduated excise taxes, fees, duties. The net effect of which almost doubles the prices of many of those products, those foreign products in Puerto Rico, and provides an artificial price support for U.S. products. 85% of Puerto Rican consumption on the island is from U.S. products. Therefore, Puerto Rico is the fourth largest market in the world for U.S. products. There's more Walgreens per square mile and Walmarts per square mile than in the United States, and more Walmarts per square mile than in the entire planet in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico's 85% of the food stuff coming from the outside is not being utilized and beyond. And I can frankly say that the United States has caused the complete dismantling of the Puerto Rico's agriculture. The ones who destroyed everything was U.S., the United States, and its policies in Puerto Rico. Because after the agriculture was dismantled in Puerto Rico, then in the 1950s, the United States went into another phase of changing the economy of Puerto Rico from a monoculture sugar production company and some tobacco, not too much, to industrialization. Okay? And it's in the Operation Bootstrap is the name of this economic plan, which under Luis Muñoz Marín, Governor Luis Muñoz Marín, which was the first elected governor of Puerto Rico in the 50s, so mining from 1898 to 1950s, Puerto Rico was ruled by U.S. military governors chosen by the President of the United States, and it's not until the 1950s that they were, and I put it on the quotes, democratic elections where Luis Muñoz Marín is elected as the governor of Puerto Rico. Under Luis Muñoz Marín, he makes an agreement with the United States of this Operation Bootstrap, which was really the industrialization of Puerto Rico. Supposedly, it was supposed to provide a lot of jobs to the Puerto Rican people. But what happened was the mass migration, the exodus of the Puerto Rican people, because those manufacturing jobs were not enough and sufficient for the labor force that existed in Puerto Rico, which were many manual laborers. And it caused one-third of the Puerto Rican people to be pushed out of Puerto Rico. So
Puerto Rican, in particular, that live in the United States, are very uneducated about the crisis in Puerto Rico. They are very uneducated about the atrocities that have occurred since 1898 when the United States first landed in Puerto Rico. They are unaware of the gas where it was illegal to fly a flag, where it was illegal to talk about the independence of Puerto Rico, if you did, it was thrown in jail. They were uninformed about the sterilization of Puerto Rican women throughout the island in the 60s and 70s and even to the 80s. So many Puerto Ricans are unaware of the massacres and the uprisings that occurred in the 1930s and the 1940s. So the Puerto Ricans that grew up in this country in the United States are simply unaware of what has happened, what their history. You know, they are worried about the day-to-day, they're growing up with American cultures and American ideas and so on. Not that it's a terrible thing, but it's most important to remember who you are and where you come from. The Puerto Ricans that live here in the United States are basically, Puerto Ricans are becoming extinct, basically, because we are losing our language, we are losing our culture, you know, we are losing our history, we are forgetting who we are because we are just simply adapting the American way of life.
Before taking to the
Sunset,
the United States government funded Congress funded these projects. It was not money from the Puerto Rican government.
What happened in Vegas is that in the 1940s, the U.S. government decided that they needed to be a Pearl Harbor in the Caribbean. So they invaded Vegas and set up on both sides of the island, which is, again, a small island municipality off the coast of Puerto Rico. I think just for the geography lesson, people forget that Puerto Rico is an archipelago and has small little islands next to it, primarily Culebra. And Vegas, Culebra had been for many decades already been a military bastion for the United States. So Vegas became the new kind of area that they were going to populate. And they set up a whole system of military bases. And they were going to start military practices. And of course, they wanted to depopulate the island. They wanted to move the population either to the mainland of Puerto Rico, or when this happened voluntarily, well, kind of voluntarily, but many people started going into to St. Croix and some of the Virgin Islands. World War II ended. So the Caribbean Pearl Harbor was never finished. There was really no reason for them to stay there, and so they invented the idea of, well, if we have military bases there, why don't we start making military maneuvers, practicing military maneuvers there? So forcibly relocated a lot of the population to lands that did not belong to them, and created a situation in which the people of Vieques were sandwiched in to 35% of the island, while 65% of it was taken over by the military. One sector of it was primarily kind of used for storage and weapons, warehousing and depositories for weapons, while the other side that they used was for active military bombings.
Turn out to Vieques, the tiny island off the eastern coast of Puerto Rico, with thousands of commemorating the 10th anniversary when the U.S. Navy stopped using their island as a bombing range. Since the 1940s, the Navy used only 3/4 of the island for bombing practice, war machines, and dumping of old munitions. Resistance to the bombing reached a turning point in 1999, when a Marine pilot missed his target and dropped 2 500-pound bombs that killed a civilian security guard. A campaign of non-violent civil disobedience eventually forced the Navy to close the facility.
Well, if you look at American history, that's what forceful relocation is, something that has always been as American as apartheid, racism, and colonialization. I mean, moving a population of people for military purposes, that's how military bases have been formed throughout the United States around the world. I mean, this country's government has a long history of forceful relocations. You can talk to various Native American groups about that. You can talk to various populations of people all over the world. They did it in Puerto Rico. When they invaded Puerto Rico on July 25th, one of the first things they started doing was setting up a military command there. Throughout the decades, they created military bases throughout the island where they have forcibly moved populations of people left and right. And people think that this doesn't happen. And again, I tell people, take your child's U.S. history book and look through it, and you see that forceful relocation and this type of colonization and imperialism is very American.
Vieques still is economically depressed. There's still technically no real hospital in Vieques. If you have cancer or heavy metal poisoning, you are going to the mainland to get treatment. Hospitals and those types of services for many years in Vieques were not given the ability to be developed because they were so reliant on the military. You know, if you got sick, you could go to the military hospital, you could go to the base hospital. But primarily, that's if you worked for the military. If you didn't, if you were civilian that wasn't employed, you had to make your way to Bajada, you had to make your way to the main island. You had to get up in the morning, get on a ferry, go to the mainland, get your medicine, get your treatments, get your chemotherapy, your radiation, or whatever treatments you're getting for your heavy metal poisoning, done there, and then make your way back. To this day, people are creating projects to help people who have the cancer and have the heavy metal poisoning, but there's still inadequate healthcare. Where's the hospital in Vieques? Where, something other than just urgent care, something other than just, clinics. don't exist.
There was a study by Dr. Jorge Colon at the University of Puerto Rico that was based on hair samples of the people of Vieques. He found 34% of the population, about a third, had toxic levels of mercury, 55% contaminated with arsenic, 69% with arsenic, 69% with cadmium, 90% with aluminum and antimony, whose toxic effects are similar to arsenic poisoning. These are all substances found in the
ordinary
situation.
We learned a picture of an undetonated bomb that was found by fishermen recently in 80 feet of water off of Vieques. The military says it spent already about $180 million, the most expensive cleanup in its history, but yet so much of the waters are still contaminated with all of these unexploded munitions. Your sense of how that cleanup has been going?
I would suggest that most of that, almost $200 million, has ended up in the bank accounts of large U.S. corporations hired by the Navy to do the cleanup. While the cleanup is taking, it's taken over 10 years so far, they're only scratching the surface. This is a process that we believe is happening with no real supervision, no genuine community participation. We believe the military is really not interested in cleaning up Vieques, and rather interested in continuing to punish Vieques for having thrown the U.S. Navy out in 2003. So we need to continue the pressure and get the support from Congress and like Congressman Serrano, Nidia Velasquez, and Luis Gutierrez, and now also Congressman Adam Grayson from Florida, have taken up this issue to help push the federal government to be responsible for the ecological destruction done on Vieques, as well as helping with the severe health crisis that resulted from these from military bombs.
Many people said that the trouble is nothing but opportunity and workloads. So, you know, this is a trouble time right now, but it's a real opportunity for Puerto Rico right now, because it's not going to have this platform again, to recalibrate not just the debt, because if you just do that, the problems will remain. We have to re-examine this relationship, because there's a status relationship between the U.S. and Puerto Rico that's creating this problem. Puerto Rico can't continue like this mistress in this Caribbean. The Commonwealth status doesn't work. It's become manifestly dysfunctional to both sides. It's not working here. If Puerto Rico can't pay the $73 billion of pension funds, start becoming shaky all over the country. So clearly, something, if you just do quarterly, as some people call it, quarterly capitalism, which is you just look at what's good for the corporation for the next quarter, these corporations, they're going to insist on paying, they're going to insist on going back to this peripheral protection. They just want to get money. They don't care, because, and you don't expect them to, because that's not their job. Their job is to maximize revenue for the shareholders and for themselves and to bring home Christmas bonus to the family. That's what they're best. It's not the United States of America, it's the United Sociedad of America, the poor people we're dealing with. So we have to get beyond that model, because, and use this opportunity to have the United States see a larger picture involved, a holistic relationship that needs to be changed, because if not, it's just going to happen in 2024. Debt service on that $73 billion alone, which will be about $7 billion a year. If you do the math, you divide 3.5 million Puerto Ricans into 7 billion, that's $2,000 for every man, woman, and child in Puerto Rico. They're going to be paying $2,000 per person just to pay the interest on this $73 billion debt, which shouldn't have existed in the first place. And these are the people that have $60,000 and $4,000 per capita, which is 25% less than Mississippi, the poorest state of the Union. Puerto Rico is a colony. It's been kept as a colony, and now it's trying to squeeze the last of blood out of it. And that's actually what they want from economically and politically, because economically you have Act 22, which gives a 20-year tax exemption to interest in dividend and capital gains income to high net worth individuals, such as John Paulson, who made $15 billion for his hedge fund betting against the New York of the American economy in 2007. So this predatory lender is going to Puerto Rico do the same thing, buy up distressed assets for pennies on the dollar, like he did 8 years ago. He's basically profiting from the misery of others, but now the misery is in Puerto Rico. That's the kind of person that's being encouraged to go to Puerto Rico, while 400,000 Puerto Ricans are leaving. So the economic sector, they love this. They also love triple taxes and bonds, because the yield of that is about 10,000, 10,000. tax exemption becomes 18% per year. So economically, Puerto Rico is exactly where the economic elites in the United States want it to be. Politically, it's where they want it to be too. Because people talk about saving this and that. Saving isn't going to happen. There's no five congressmen are not going to give up their seats so that five Puerto Rican congressmen can come in. But Congress is a zero sum game. It's 435 seats. Then you can't just add 5 seats. Then you're going to have to lose 5 seats. Senate is a different matter. They're not 100% Senate. So Congress is not going to allow, they're just not going to give up 5 seats, especially 5 Democratic seats, but Republicans are going to vote it. So politically and economically, Puerto Rico is a real mess.
Well, the U.S. is interested in birds, just a bird cage. So they have no interest, they have no human interest. Even now, certainly 100 years ago, people wouldn't know what's going on in Puerto Rico. There was no television or radio, or at least radio coming this way, no internet. You know, Puerto Rico was separated by language, culture, 1,500 miles of ocean, technology. So what happened, it's not like what happened to the States today. So what happened to Puerto Rico never happened at all. So the second thing that I need to amend is that the United States, Puerto Rico only registers on the Puerto Rico awareness, the U.S. awareness, when Puerto Rico becomes a big problem. And so right now, because Puerto Rico allegedly owes a bunch of money, is why you have the United States paying attention, otherwise the money can't pay attention. So she asked for, when people started moving away from Walton Island because they just couldn't afford to live there anymore, there's been a net out migration of about 10% of the population, from 4 million to 3.6 million over the last 15 years. So the Wall Street services, they still want to get the hedge fund guys, John Paulson guys, they want to get their profits out. So they want to get 100% of the profits from the 90% of the people that are left on the island. So they tell two successive administrations that they have to inflict fiscal austerities, or else they're going to downgrade the debt to junk bond status. So two successive administrations did precisely that. They raised water rates 67%. The electricity went up to 29 cents per kilowatt hour. They raised gasoline taxes twice in 1 year. They raised property taxes, small business taxes. They rolled back teacher pensions. They just enacted 11.5% sales tax. They closed 200 schools. I mean, they made Puerto Rico basically really unlivable. In order to comply with the demand of the Wall Street rating firms. So they put Puerto Rico against the wall now, and there's no Chapter 9 bankruptcy protection. So what you're getting is, you're getting the physical amount to continue, you're going to have a gentrification of the entire island, because people are going to continue moving out, the tax base will keep shrinking, the remaining people will have to pay even more taxes, and it's going to be what Governor Garcia Padilla called a downward spiral. Meanwhile, you got people like Paulson coming in, buying up all these distressed assets, the pennies on the dollar, and that's where the gentrification will come in. The next 20 years, if this doesn't change, Puerto Rico will be the same as we know it. That's why Puerto Rico needs to make a move right now, and we can get independent as soon as possible.
Since the making of this film, the PROMESA bill, the Puerto Rico Oversight and Management Act, was created and signed by President Obama. The bill promised the following. A minimum wage for all adults aged 18 to 24 will be lowered to $4.25 per hour. Schools, hospitals, and public service agencies will continue to close and leave residents without education, health care, and a means to survive. Pensions can be frozen and or cut to repay the debt. A financial control board will be elected, none of whom need to live on the island. The financial control board is able to meet in secret and disperse the island's finances however they see fit. They are also not obligated to disclose any of this information to the island's residents. The Financial Control Board can accept gifts from outside corporations, opening the door for further corruption. All decisions made by the Control Board are final. And finally, the Control Board has legal immunity from lawsuits by the citizens of Puerto Rico.
Thank you so much. Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to the rulings of the underlying bill. I submitted 10 amendments for consideration. Not one of them, not one of my amendments was ruled in order to be debated today by my colleagues. But I don't oppose the bill because I didn't get an amendment in here. The fact that my amendments were deemed unsuitable for debate by the Congress of the United States is an indication of the underlying problems with the bill. If you can't debate the future of Puerto Rico here in the Congress of the United States, imagine when you give it to seven people, unelected by anyone here in Puerto Rico or in the United States. They can meet in secret. They can meet in secret without informing us of any one of their decisions. If we can't have a debate about Puerto Rico, if it's so important, why not take time to have a debate about the amendments that are offered by people here? We're engaged today in a wholly undemocratic activity in the world's greatest democracy. We're debating how we will take power from the people who are virtually powerless already. As I have said throughout this debate, Puerto Rico, by virtue of court cases and the territorial clause of the Constitution, belongs to, but is not a part of the United States. I said to all of my colleagues, treat them with dignity, with respect. Do not put blinders on as though they do not exist. Yes, the territorial clause of the Constitution of the United States says that they are territory and that therefore they are property of the United States of America. But I submit to each and every one of you that they are live human beings with hearts, with souls, and should demand and receive the respect that any other human. Don't treat them like a piece of trash. Don't treat them like an inanimate object that has no right to dignity and to respect, which is what we are doing here today. I cannot vote for this. You know, President Obama referred to the special place that Kenya owns in his heart, because he says, it will always be a special place because that is the place of the birth of my father, he says. Let me submit to you, Puerto Rico is the place of the birth of my father. And I cannot come here and turn my back on the place of the birth of my father with this outrageously undemocratic and this outrageously unfair proposal to the people of Puerto Rico. Think about it. You are imposing a junta, because that's what they're calling you. Yeah. There will be no difference between this junta and the junta of Pinochet in Chile, as far as the international community is concerned. And why? Because yesterday, and the Speaker of the House of Puerto Rico was in the gallery, they approved a resolution rejecting this junta, elected by the people of Puerto Rico. What does the Congress of the United States, the democracy of the world say? We don't care. Today, as we speak, the Senate of Puerto Rico has a resolution rejecting. And just this past Sunday, every candidate for governor in Puerto Rico, every last candidate for governor in Puerto Rico that was successful, had in their platform a rejection of PROMESA. How many times do the people of Puerto Rico have to reject this proposal so that the Congress of the United States treats them with some respect and some dignity? And I just want to say, control board? What's the last control board we know so much about? Flint, Michigan. And what did the control board do? They poisoned the people, American citizens, in Flint. And let me suggest to you that if you give power to a control board unelected and unsupervised by anyone here, be careful. Be careful. Remember Flint. Remember the poisoning of the people, what the control board did there. That is exactly what we should suspect will happen unless we put it. People say, oh, Luis, but what's your alternative? Our alternative is quite simple. Have a conversation. Not a conversation that begins, we will not spend a penny on the people of Puerto Rico. That's the way our conversation is. We will not, you have to show me a solution in which we do not spend a penny. Well, let me tell you, we spend money. The Jones Act imposed on the people of Puerto Rico the most expensive merchant marines in the world. Woo! Imposed on the people cost $500 million a year. Why don't we lift that from them? Medicaid and Medicare? You seen the reimbursement schedules in Puerto Rico? They pay the same in FICA taxes, but don't receive the same
in terms of reimbursement.
Census in Puerto Rico, we've been suffering under one of the worst financial crises, fiscal crises in memory. And as a consequence of the inability for them to restructure the debt, you see hospitals unable to operate, ambulances shutting down, basic services shutting down, government workers not being paid. It has brought enormous hardship to Puerto Rico through some amazing work by our Treasury Department, legislative staff, and a bipartisan effort in both the House and the Senate. We finally have legislation that at least is going to give Puerto Rico the capacity, the opportunity to get out from under this lingering uncertainty with respect to the debt. It's not enough, it's not going to be sufficient to solve all the problems that Puerto Rico faces, but it is an important first step on the path of creating more stability, better services, and greater prosperity over the long term for Puerto Rico. So I want to thank all four leaders. Congress, the hard work in getting this to my desk, and I want to let the people of Puerto Rico know that although there's still some tough work that we're going to have to do, today Puerto Rico as a whole is in. This indicates how committed my administration is to making sure that they get all they need. So I will stop here and thank you all.
About those
the military being in Vieques, so. Well, Gedeo is going to bring us a little up to date, because as you know, a lot has happened with Puerto Rico. So he's going to bring us up to date and then open it up for questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for your round of applause. It was very moving. The film took quite a long time to make, a lot of research, a lot of homework. I couldn't have done it without my producer and my my spouse, Jessica Alamo. Thanks again. So we can cover the film, some questions real quick, or I can just briefly talk about what's happening. What would you guys like to do first?
Tell us.
Come on. So right now, the governor is scheduled to resign on the 2nd of August. The real reason he is resigning is because he was ready to become, he was ready to be indicted. That's the real reason why he resigned. It's not, you know, that he felt for the people and so on and so forth. It wasn't any of that. It's just a matter of he wanted to resign because he wanted to protect himself, because if he stayed in office, he would be held responsible for what happened, and therefore he would be indicted. And of course, he doesn't want that. Other than that, now he has Wanda Vasquez, who is his son.
Do we have a spare mic?
There's another one.
There's no Lieutenant Governor in Puerto Rico. Wanda Vasquez is next in line, and they already want her gone because she's basically cut from the city hall. She's got blood on her hands, she's the same way he does, so they don't want her. No one wants her, and they're asking for her resignation as well. I really can't see her taking office. The person who would have taken his spot had resigned long before. A couple of weeks ago, because he saw the forest through the trees and he knew it coming and he quit. So now we have no one because everyone else in his cabinet is under 35. And if you're under 35, you cannot be governor of Puerto Rico. So right now,